Dragon Father, the Cricks podcast that has effective recursion.
Glorious.
So in this episode, we're going to attempt to recall conversations we had 2 weeks ago and say all of the clever, insightful things we said without stumbling over ourselves or accidentally just repeating a conversation we had 4 weeks ago. But in the time since we had our technical disaster with episode 3, there's been a few small developments. I wondered if you guys wanted to make any comment on the two big pieces of news, which are the start of the CID process and the discontinuation of the press gang.
So, I'm Klaas, just to make sure everybody knows who's talking. I have to be honest, I don't care at all about the CID. I mean, it's great, it's fine. I don't have time to play Cricks, let alone I have time to play some, well, dudes on pigs, or pigs on dudes.
Pigs on dudes. Piggybacks are the greatest thing this game has ever had, just for the record.
Probably, but yeah, can't be arsed. And the discontinuation of the press gang, that's bad.
Yeah, I think the moment of silence kind of says it all. I think we're all a bit sad that it's happening.
Yeah, I think we want to be a positive podcast, so maybe we shouldn't just not talk about it. It's, ugh.
I did want to talk a little bit about the CID process, though not specifically about Grimkin, because this is a Cricks podcast. So I'll leave it at, I think piggybacks are fucking awesome. Grimkin looked like a lot of fun. But what I'm interested in talking about is the process itself, because I think that's going to be really relevant to Cricks in a couple of cycles. Because we know that the first Theme Force book that we're getting is the Bane Theme Force, which means that they're going to be putting a lot of the Bane models into the CID process for a new round of playtesting. The current cycle is Grimkin, so everyone's testing new stuff. And Klaus, I know you haven't really looked at it too closely, but Ryan, have you looked much at the CID forums?
Yeah.
How do you think that process will work out when we're dealing with trying to make new models, or taking old models and looking at them again? I think Grimkin's working out really well, because no one's emotionally invested in it yet. I worry that when it comes around to, like, alright, let's test all the Bane models, that it's just going to get deluged with Cricks players going, oh, Bane Warriors need stealth back and they need tough back naturally, and just throwing, going like, I demand all these new rules and these complete rewrites of all the rules. So from what you've seen of the process, do you think they'll be protected against that and that it'll still be valuable feedback?
It depends, I think, on who's actually doing the CID process, because for something new like Grimkin, kind of everyone's looking at it with a fresh set of eyes. Nobody's seen this stuff before, whereas if you're looking at Banes, you've probably got a mix of people that have picked up Cricks in Mark 3 and then they're interspersed with the people that played Cricks during, like, the heady heights of Mark 2. And so you're automatically going to get this difference of opinion, I guess, between players that picked up the game in Mark 3 and said, well, actually, Bane Warriors are fairly costly for what they bring to the table. And then the people that played during Mark 2 when Cricks were bent as hell, and actually they wanted to be bent as hell again, maybe. I don't know. It'll be a fine line to balance, and I don't envy the development team in kind of critically analysing the feedback they get.
Well, I was saying to Klaus earlier that, like, they've been really tight with the formatting of, you know, how you report particular feedback so far with, you know, the colour coding and stuff. And I think that works out really well in sorting the good feedback from the bad. Even just as a casual reader on the forums, like, I've already kind of got a set in my head that, you know, there's certain people who are giving this really good feedback, and you read what they write in detail. And there's some other times where you read a piece of feedback and you scan down to the things they've marked as red, and you instantly know that person has misinterpreted something or has had a really weird game or something like that. And you instantly know that feedback is not, or just to be unfair, that person is just wrong about what they're saying. You can look at it and go, that is just objectively not true, so I'm not going to read the rest of your battle. But I think the process they've put in place is certainly quite good, and I do think that the mood on the CID forums seems pretty positive at the moment anyway. I don't know if that's because they're moderating it really effectively and just, like, shutting down anyone who tries to throw salt at it, or because people are just approaching it very positively, or because it's Grimkin and no one is invested yet in...
Yeah.
Like, people are invested in Grimkin not being busted, and in the, you know, the units they like being quite good, but they're not going, oh, I have 30 Bane Knights sitting on a shelf, and I need them to be bent again. And one other question I want to ask, just in terms of rampant speculation, is, so let's flash forward. They've put all of the models that currently have Bane written in their title onto CID. What would you recommend for those units?
Can we do unit by unit?
That's a hard question.
Yeah, let's go unit by unit. So let's start with, I think, the Bane unit that took the biggest hit, Bane Riders.
Their threat range needs to be larger. They need to be faster. I don't care how they do it. I really don't care how they do it. But they're just now so fucking slow, and it's just totally not worth their points. It's just, yeah, sit there and wait for your opponent to take care of him.
Yeah, without too much trouble, to be honest, because they're super vulnerable to things people are already... Well, all Cav models that aren't Storm Lances are going to get caught in the crossfire. Because if you can deal with Storm Lances, you can deal with any Cav.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much.
Because you're bringing the boosted guns that get through Arcane Shields.
And that hits the defense.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have no idea how they would solve this for Bane Cav, but something needs to happen. I would try to give them more speed, because this is what we do as Kricks. I think they're accurate enough. That's fine. Probably their damage output could go up compared to Yulin's, for example, who just hit a fucking truckload harder. Who are actually also harder to kill because they have defensive line or whatever defensive tag that is.
Bane Riders are hard. My biggest gripe about Bane Riders is kind of the double loss of threat, as in they lost the 2-inch melee and they lost the additional threat range from... what's it called? Curse. So I would probably... The thing that made Bane Riders work for me in Mark 2 and made them kind of worth their points was Ghostly Ride by attack. So I would probably try and simulate that with... they keep Curse and then they go up to like Mat 8 hitting things. Give them Apparition, because then that gives them kind of different threat range vector to Curse or Vengeance. And then I'd probably give them some Bushwhack as an order. So then that would be, it kind of open up opportunities for actually standing within kind of run to engage range of enemy models, but you can charge them if they don't come in. But if they run to engage, you can kind of bushwhack some guys, fence away and then reposition to kind of get janky shenanigans that way. But either way, you go up the PNS as well.
I think the problems are twofold, and it is threat range and hitting power. Like, that their hitting power isn't high enough above, even, like, put them next to Bane Warriors.
Yeah. Where
one Bane Warrior hits harder than one Bane Rider, and there's more Bane Warriors. So even competing directly on that level, their threat ranges aren't even all that different when it boils down to it.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm okay with them being slower and shorter threat range if their brief is, we are the shorter threat range Cav. Because we're differentiating them from Soul Hunters, which have like quite an extreme threat range and lots of anti-infantry attacks. So we go, okay, these guys are short threat range, they don't care about terrain, and they hit hard. So I would like to see them hit much harder, and I mean significantly harder. I think that given with what they're competing with in Kricks, they need to hit like trucks.
Yep.
If that stays their threat range, they need a couple more power through whatever angle you... An interesting thing I saw that could give them a very unique role is that if they get Phantom Hunter, so that they can use terrain really effectively to get up the board. I still think they should hit a bit harder than they currently do, but I think Phantom Hunter would be an interesting way to mitigate the threat range problem, because they can get close, as in behind a forest, and then charge through it.
Yeah, maybe so.
I think that would combo really well with Ghostly, and it would give them... The only good thing... I think you could compensate for the low threat range if you could also add in, we genuinely don't care about terrain at all. We just see through it. We move through it. So then the threat range, their lowish threat range, no, actually very low threat range, even compared to like Stixis Raiders, is dealt with in a different direction. You know, it's something I'm seeing like that works really well with Stalkers, for instance, is that their threat range is a walking based threat range. So they don't need line of sight at the start of their move.
Yeah.
We've all had decent success with Bane Warriors. I think that they're in a fairly okay place. I mean, we'd all love buffs to the unit, but I don't think we'd push too hard, right? Like, if it came around to CID, you wouldn't be screaming for Bane Warriors to be the first Bane unit to get a buff.
No. If PP wants me to use the unit attachment, then that needs to change. or needs to get better, but the unit itself is okay. I mean, the min units, the six guys for 10 points, was fine.
What are your thoughts on Bane Knights at the moment?
I don't know. I think they actually, in reality, they don't hit that much less hard than they did in Mark II. I think, with powerful charge, the difference isn't that bad anymore. They actually got cheaper compared to Mark II. But
slightly.
I don't know. I just never put them on the table. Not even with the Lich, I think.
I played them as my third unit in a Coven list at one point. Now, I think I'd go to Bane Warriors now. But, I had Ragman in the list. And we thought, they're a good occultation target. They might handle the armor cracking quite well. But even though on paper, their hitting power on a charge is about the same, really feel the lack of upward spikes.
Yeah, massive.
While they're averaging the same, it means that they are failing a little more against like base high armors, which we're seeing a lot more of. I think what people need to do with Bane Knights is figure out what niche they're supposed to fill. Like, what are they supposed to do that's different? Like, are they supposed to be more survivable and more defensive than Bane Warriors? Then maybe it shouldn't be a charge-based bonus to their POW. I'm not sure where it is they're supposed to fall for their points.
Yeah. I think Bane Knights themselves are probably okay, because I've tried Bane Knights themselves with quite a few casters, and you can run them with, all Shade 3, Occultate the... And, those Bane Knights would just last forever. I played a game against a rep player, and by the end of the game, he'd killed, I think it's something stupid, 32 Bane Knights, and I still had 8 on the table. But the only problem there is you're paying 8 points for the synergy with Tartarus, so the Bane Knights themselves were okay with, Ghoul Shade 3 or Scar 2, or, Denny 1, I've run 30 Bane Knights with, and funnily enough, they're still fine, you just run over things. But is Tartarus just a problem? Because Bane Knights themselves don't bring any inherent synergy, so I don't know if you could possibly make Bane Knight a little bit more interesting by giving them a UA along the lines of the Bane Warrior UA. If you took that and put that in a Bane Knight unit, it would actually be quite cool, because Bane Knights aren't actually that bad at going after infantry when you start throwing in Curse or Black Spot or something like that. So actually them having Voidbringer stacked with Vengeance would be quite neat.
Also, Bane Warrior UA giving Rise and Tough works really nicely as a synergy with Vengeance.
Yeah.
In a way that it doesn't quite work. Well, it doesn't work for 6 points. So yeah, maybe one of the little solutions is switch the UAs over.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's a Theme Force benefit. You can attach a Bane Warrior UA to a Bane Knight unit. I would be all over for that, because then you get your Brutal Charge plus your Dark Shroud all in one unit. It'd be beautiful.
Yep. I can take it.
I also think that Tartarus is a problem in that their mat is 6 based on you're going to bring Tartarus. Bringing Tartarus just isn't as valuable as it used to be. Solos are hard to pay for anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And 8 points is a colossal amount to pay for a single solo. And it's not like he's bringing Eris level utility.
No, and Eris is even cheaper than 8 points. I think she only costs 7.
He needs to be doing something far more brutal. I mean, he's not terrible. He's still hitting like a truck. And he's still, putting Banes back on the table, though he's not threshering anymore.
Yeah, but I want him thresher.
I want my thresher back just for the occasional beautiful moment where you put 8 Banes back on the table. Because someone went and killed one of your jacks, which you're now taking more of.
Yes. I want Thrasher back.
I doubt that CID is going to involve massive redesigns, but what I'd really love with Banes is for every Bane unit or solo to have a slightly unique curse. And have that be a thing that they do. Like, say, Bane Knight leaders do a curse that is +1 to hit. Bane Warrior leaders do a curse that is +1 to power. And Tartarus does either of those curses. And Bane Riders have a curse that does something. But, I think that'd be a cool mechanic. That's a ground up redesign that I don't see happening, but I think it would be cool for curses to be a Bane theme.
Yeah.
And would encourage you to take different units. So, you take the Warriors and the Knights, and then you've got a +1/+1 possibility in your curses. As opposed to leaning on, I bring Tartarus because he does the curse.
I'd like one of the curses to add to speed.
Yeah, I'd like that back too. So Riders bring speed, Warriors bring damage, and Knights bring +1 to hit, and Tartarus brings
everything.
But stacks with the others. So he makes any one of those +1s into a +2. I think that would really encourage you to bring diverse Bane lists, like, you know, Warriors, Knights, and Riders, as opposed to bringing 30 Bane Knights, or 30 Bane Warriors, or 15 Bane whatever Riders, if they make those awesome again. Yeah. Also, I assume we're going to see some new Bane stuff with that, so let's hope we finally get that Tartarus on a horse that they said they had in the pipe in Mark II that was just too broken to live. I think that I'm interested just in how the CID process is going to work, because with the old models, because every time you talk about, oh, what do we want Banes to have, are we all not thinking, we just want it to be like it was?
Maybe so. Isn't Agathia?
Agathia's a Bane as well, so she'll probably be on that CID as well.
I could deal with her having these, like Gristle used to have, these war cries.
Oh, that she had curses.
Yeah, she had curses, yeah.
That'd be cool.
I mean, going down the route of the different curses, that would be really cool for Agathia to have curses as
that
well.
That would be really cool.
And different kinds. I want cacophony. Just give it to her. You can do it. PP, listen to me, you can do it.
So yeah, that was my little, like, CID diversion. Ryan, you said you had a tournament coming up.
Yeah, I've got a tournament coming up this weekend. I'll be your way, actually. One for us in London.
Oh yeah, they sold out before I could get a ticket.
We've not had a few up our way since ModCon, so I was looking to get up to London. And we've got our England WT Selection Day thing, 1st of April, so there's a good chance to shake the cobwebs off. And I was going to try out some new lists, but I want to play Ghost Sleep because it's just so much fun. But I'm still trying to find something to pair with that, so toss up at the moment between Morton Ebrescatu and Scavarus, depending on which matchups I want to get wrecked by and which matchups I wouldn't mind actually being able to play a game into.
So which Ghost Fleet do you play with, Lich 1 or with Denegra?
Depends which I go with. If I go with Scavarus, then I would probably play Lich 1 Ghost Fleet. If I go with Scar 2, I would probably play Denny 1 Ghost Fleet, because I quite like Scavarus and quite high armor builds, could you just manipulate them with TK and Feast of Worms and all that fun stuff. Whereas Scar 2 doesn't really have the armor cracking, so you need the Time Walker of Denny, I think.
Yeah. I think if you play Denny 1 Scar 2, you're a little bit vulnerable to the gun line. I mean, to like Legion gun line. I don't know if that's an issue when you're in your neck of the woods. It apparently is in my...
I think it also leaves you kind with those two casters, you're super vulnerable to Electro Leap bullshit. Both of those casters are very, very vulnerable to it. And I like to have at least one caster that's not going to randomly die to Electro Leaps.
Nah, it doesn't exist. Let me stop you right there. It doesn't exist. I mean, if it's really Electro Leaps, then a caster is called Nemo 3, and there is no caster, I think, in the game that doesn't randomly die to Electro Leaps made by Nemo 3.
Yeah.
Oh, so, no, there's definitely casters that live through that. But what I'm saying is that...
It's power 12s and 3 dice, dude.
Scar 2 and Denegra die by accident against that kind of list.
That's awful.
They die by accident because they're standing near the wrong model against a completely normal Signar list.
Like, bad.
You know, you hit... It's always the problem with Scar 2. Even when she was completely immune to attacks, is that after she's feeded, she's taken some damage on her already, her armor's that great. You can Electro Leap her to death just by having one unit of Storm Lances and a Storm Maul in your list. It might not even be the... Like, if someone's bringing the full Nemo 3, I'm going to Electro Leap your caster to death. Yeah, like, Scavers isn't living through that either, bro.
Yeah.
Unless he's camping all his focus and putting Death Ward on himself.
Yeah, Death Ward is what helps you, not the focus. But, yeah, I mean... I think if you want to live through that, you just need shitloads of incorporeal. You might actually be better off by just using the Negra too, because she's immune to one turn and a two. I'm not kidding. It's true.
Oh, sorry. I just had a sudden coughing fit based on the thought of actually playing the Negra 2 in Mark 3. Oh, no. What actually, the incorporeal models thing, though, is really helpful. Like, I found just having Black Banes in the list is a really huge help against General Signar Electro Leap bullshit.
Yep.
Because you just jam Black Banes up the ass of anything that they're going to target, and they absorb all the Electro Leaps for you, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that helps really well against electroleaves is Wraith Engines. You know you want to talk about
them. Oh, you so know I want to talk about Wraith Engines. Because that was one of the segments of the last podcast that I did want to put out in the world is how I've been playing a Wraith Engine in all of my Ghost Fleet lists, and I can't quite bring myself to take it out. Because the maths on that model, like just a sheer amount of its work value, is not very high. It's certainly not 15 points high. But the effect that it has on the table in terms of physically taking up a lot of space, in terms of spawning machine wraiths and doing shenanigans with machine wraiths, it feels like it gives me lots of little ways to play. You know, just taking up space or absorbing electro leaps or making charges difficult because it's taking up space is a lot. And maybe 15 points is a lot for a thing that takes up space, but it does eventually do work, and it facilitates work with the rest of your list. And particularly in Ghost Fleet, where you're giving up the one gigantic reason to play out of theme for every faction, which is Ragman. Access to Dark Shroud is a really big deal. We've talked about it before, about how much the -4 armor swing every turn is really important to Crix. So you've got that as well. So it can do a lot of just sitting around being an inconvenient piece for a long part of the game and still get its value if it only actually makes attacks in turn 4.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing a few more Wraith Engines pop up. Klaus, you sent me like a couple of links to ATC lists that are running double Wraith Engines. And there's someone at the WTC on Team Poland who was doing it with Scar 1 as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of control of the space on the board you would get out of two Wraith Engines, I think, is quite significant.
Yeah, totally.
In terms of Ghost Fleet specifically, I mean, that Wraith Engine is taking up the points you would spend on, what, two cannons and maxing a unit, more or less? Or maybe some battle group?
I think more battle group than anything else. Yeah,
you're probably talking another heavy.
Yeah. And then again, it's Ghost Fleet.
That's not a huge value thing in Crix in general and Ghost Fleet specifically. I mean, obviously it depends on the caster. The Wraith Engine's value goes way down if you're doing Lich 1 Ghost Fleet because you're already putting out Dark Shroud. If you're playing almost anything else, that Dark Shroud has been a really great value to me. And I know that on paper they're not great, but the kind of plays that they make available to me, other than just forcing people into the ground with numbers, it does more than just add to that. And it lets me feel, maybe it's just that I feel like it gives me clever options, but I'm finding it really hard not to keep that Wraith Engine in all of those lists. Like, what do you guys think? Have you had any experience with it?
No.
Nope.
I haven't tried it yet. I'm still waiting on mine, so I can't squeeze the point for it in a lot of my lists at the moment. And transport space is at a premium, so
transport space is an issue.
What I find really cool, though, about the Battle Engine or about the Wraith Engine is that it's like, it comes from one of the shittiest slots of models, which is Battle Engines. I mean, face it, there's no real good Battle Engine in all of the game. And then it comes out of a faction like Crix that is generally seen as the crappiest faction out there. And it kind of redeems us into matchups where we traditionally just get our asses kicked and slapped seven ways from Sunday, which is, for example, Signar. That is very special, I think.
In the eternal battle against Stormlances, I find that a Wraith Engine goes a really long way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stormlances have trouble maneuvering around terrain and getting space. If someone delivers their Stormlances into an open space, they'll murder the world, whatever they hit. You've got a Wraith Engine there, physically in their way, and all of a sudden they get one, two Stormlances out of five in, or your Wraith Engine is sitting there going, well, there's a wall over there or a forest over there. Especially with the move towards lots of small bits of terrain, I feel the Wraith Engine can take a lot of advantage of it. It can go and apply Dark Shroud to a whole unit of Stormlances if it needs to. Also, a Speed 7 Battle Engine gets places it never should. My favorite Wraith Engine play so far was, like, it was lurking out. It was on recon. And it was lurking out near a flag. And I realized I could get it over my opponent's entire battle line into one of its choir members. So it just, like, swoops over into the choir, stands dangerously close to their caster for the next turn, smacks the choir member, turns it into a machine wraith, which then charges his, you know, armor 20-something.
Templar.
That's the one. There we go. Like, their fortified Templar that was sitting in the zone and that my ghost pirates were having a hard time removing. And poor little Templar just walks on out of the zone. And two turns later, I win on scenario. Because that Templar couldn't do anything about the fact that I was going to generate a new machine right the next turn and do it again. And so it provides all sorts of janky plays like that. And I'm going to save the deep in the jank tank Wraith Engine thing for Immortal Nebra Dojo. But it doesn't feel just janky. It feels like a piece that works sideways. It's not bringing raw power to your lists, but it is bringing you the ability to outplay your opponent.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we can wish for.
And it just being this big incorporeal thing, I mean, just on a psychological basis, your opponent wants to remove it. It's a 15-point model, it's not worth the world, but your opponent is kind of going, there's this gigantic incorporeal thing that I can't touch. It's fast enough as well that you can just draw out its incorporeal killers off and away from your Blackbanes. And they're going to focus in on this Wraith Engine and go, I need to get my magical guns over here. And you're like, yep, I'm speed 7, so I can actually belt it across the table. I can reposition far more easily than Battle Engine has any right to do. And draw out its few solutions to incorporeal, while your other incorporeal unit wreaks havoc over here. You're forcing choices on them. And one of Ghost Fleet's quiet points of power is that it's bringing a lot of incorporeal models and demanding magical weapons from your opponent.
Yeah, very much true.
In an environment where people don't have high volume of magical weapon attacks. So I'm going to use that kind of that segue of jeep into the deep into the jank tank to bring us on to our main segment, which is Immortal Nebra Dojo. So Ryan, do you want to take us through the important changes to Immortal Nebra that occurred with the dynamic update a couple of weeks ago?
Okay, so prior to the dynamic update, Terralisk was, crap, basically.
He was a sacrificial lamb target, is what he was.
Yeah, he was a sacrificial lamb target because of the wording on Overrun and Spell Slave. You basically couldn't benefit from a lot of Immortal Nebra's kit with the spells, apart from Doom Spiral and Void Gate.
Void Keep is an upgate. Void Keep is an upgate.
Yes.
I got to stand by my original phrasing.
Yeah, I like that better. Void Keep is an upgate.
But yeah, so Darylus really couldn't do anything other than Doom Spiral before, and you were still paying points for it.
Basically, yeah.
Darylus is shit, though.
Post update, Derelict was buff, I guess you call it. Although Derelict is quite different now, so not really sure whether you call it a buff or a tangent or whatever. But
ground up redesign, I think.
Yeah, a bit of a redesign. They gave Derelict Empower, which is quite good. Doom Spiral as a direct spell, which is also fine. And Tune Up, which is pretty amazing and correct. There's a lot of good targets for it. Tune Up basically means the next basic attack that a Warjack makes is fully boosted. So yeah, Tune Up, there's a lot of good targets and correct. Worth nipping it in the bud because I've seen it in a lot of places. Tune Up does not work on the Corrupted Blaster attack because the 5-inch AoE is not linked to the attack. But other than that, there are a lot of good targets for Tune Up. So it's worth trying different jacks with her and seeing what you like. They can tune up on.
I'll take you through the rest of Immortal Nebra's card, which is the same as it was prior to the dynamic update, but in the context of having access to Tune Up, has made quite a significant change, I think, to Immortal Nebra's strength level. Her basic stat line is speed 6, mat 6, rat 4, 15-16 defensive stats. She's got Pathfinder and Undead. She has 2 PNS-12 magical weapons with range 2, which almost never come up unless something's gone terribly wrong, but if something has gone terribly wrong, she can make some attacks there. She's got, on the front of her card, what I think is her real money ability, which is Interface. While base-to-base with this model, a Warjack in the battle group can spend focus points that's on this model, so meaning that it can spend through a Warcaster stack of focus. A Kraken base-to-base with Immortal Nebra can spend 6 focus on her, plus its power-up focus, plus its tune-up. And that's a pretty huge deal. That's a heap of focus to wash through Colossal. She also has Repair D3 plus 3, which is a nice addition. She's got Cull Soul, which again should only come up if something's gone terribly wrong. And she can't be knocked down, which has given her not great defensive stats a nice little bonus to her survivability. Her spell list is Doom Spiral, which now also appears on Daryllus as a spell action. And that is a range 8, POW 12 nuke for 2 focus. That, if it damages a warjack that's part of a battle group, the controller suffers D3 damage points. She has Jumpstart, which is a 1 cost control area spell that allows models in the spellcaster's battle group to stand up and no longer be stationary and turn to face any direction. It's a pretty niche spell. It very rarely gets cast, but when it gets cast, it's really efficient. So it's nice to have on the card, though you're not going to build any strategies around it. Then you've got Overrun, which is a spell you do build strategies around. When target model in the spellcaster's battle group destroys one or more enemy models with an attack, immediately after the attack is resolved, one model in the spellcaster's battle group that's in its control range can make a full advance, then Overrun expires. Model can only advance once per turn as a result of Overrun. Overrun lasts for one turn, which is a lot of text that says, you cast Overrun on a model, and if that model kills something, a model in your battle group gets to make an advance. It's worth noting as well that Overrun used to say Overrun can only be cast once per turn. It no longer has that sentence. So you could theoretically have more than one Overrun work, but you'd have to apply to different models.
Okay.
You've got Sacrificial Lamb, which is a 1-cost spell, which removes a friendly faction warrior model in order to give 1 focus to every jack in your battle group that's in your control range. So some nice focus efficiency there. She has Spectral Steel, which gives a warjack in battle group plus 2 armor and ghostly. And finally, Void Gate, which is a cost 3, range 10. We're wrong. It's not an upkeep anymore. It just lasts a round.
Okay.
It's a cost 3, range 10, AoE 3 spell, the last 1 round, and while enemy models are in the AoE, they can't cast or channel spells on top of the... not a great spell.
Situationally useful.
At most, it's going to force a warcaster to move out of an AoE, so not a lot of situations where it's going to be great.
There's one instance where Void Gate is probably pure money, but I'm not sure whether you could build multi to play that matchup. And that's Wormwood, because if you can somehow get Stalker or something to the Shifting Stone circle that's around Wormwood, and then land a Void Gate on Wormwood, you can basically set up on Wormwood to kill him the turn after, and you can't actually get out of it with Unseen Path, because it's a spell and the tree can't move. It's not going to be pretty, for sure, but there's probably something there.
So, I think that there are 2 ways to play more with her current kit, and that is trying to maximize focus efficiency with Sacrificial Lamb, as in, like, sheer numbers of war. You find the warjacks that make the best use out of having 2 focus on them, and you go that direction and just bring as much of that as possible. Or, you try and really abuse interface, which means washing as much focus as possible through the most efficient model possible, which, in my mind, is a crack.
Yeah.
So, like, I think the primary thing is Mortanebra is the best Kraken caster in the faction.
Yeah.
Skara comes pretty close, because she also has an armor buff, and Krakens with Black Spot are heinously abusable. But they require things like landing the Black Spot and having infantry to target with them. Whereas, no matter what your target is, interface and Spectral Steel make for a very good Kraken, just regardless. You roll minimum on your spiker shots, and you just get 2, and you're still washing 6 focus through your Kraken. Like, that's absolute minimum, assuming you cast nothing in the blast damage, which is tuned up. You've still got 3 boosted gunshots from your Kraken, and that's bare minimum. You can very easily boost every single gunshot that comes out of that Kraken. And I've played a few games with Mortanebra Kraken so far, and every time it has done at least its value in points in damage. Like, there's no denying the amount of work it gets done. And also, possibly the most hilariously brilliant thing that could possibly happen to Mortanebra is a couple of heavies wandering in to melee interface range.
Yeah, that sounds funny.
I haven't had it happen with multiple heavies. I did have it happen with a bunch of Storm Lances hitting him. And then there were like 5 Storm Lances within 4-inch reach. So I was able to kill 6 Storm Lances that turn by melee interfacing through them and then kill-shotting into the last one, boosting every single role that was involved. I think that's the first archetype of Morden Ever, so let's talk about that a little bit. What do you think you need to do to get the most out of that Kraken, other than what Morden Ever is doing? You need that Kraken to survive long enough to get its work done. I think we just lost Ryan. So I'll pitch the question to Klaus first. What do you think you need to do to keep that Kraken alive long enough to boss the table for, say, I figure you need about 2.5 turns of work out of him. You know, minimum 2. It'd be great if you could get 3. So how do you get 3 turns of good work out of that Kraken? Knowing that Morty's going to fuel it, it's going to be great, but how do you make sure that it has that impact?
I think 2 things. First of all, well, you might want to play Tara to make sure that the Kraken doesn't die that easily. But you also want to have maximum damage output for the Kraken. So you need a source of Dark Shroud, because Morty herself doesn't have a damage buff. And very important, you need Morty to survive, because everybody sees the Kraken on the table and knows that it's not about the Kraken, it's about the caster. I mean, that's the way you lose games with Morden Ever, by getting her killed.
And she does want to be nuzzled right up next to that Kraken.
Exactly. So you need to build a list that, well, gives the Kraken some damage, so that has a source of Dark Shroud. And you want to have a list that has, I don't know, shield guards, body blocks, anything to keep Morden Ever alive. And then, well, I think we very much circle back to the great old Wraith engine that just tends to do a little bit of both.
Yeah, I mean, I personally love the idea, and I haven't tried the idea yet, of running a pair of Wraith engines with Morden Ever. So, you know, let me paint a mental picture for you. You got the Kraken sitting there at the back of his own, in range of most things that matter, slowly getting that work. And there are 2 Wraith engines sitting right in front. So your opponent can't get to the Kraken. And your opponent has to bring very specific things to get those Wraith engines out of the way. Which also happen to bring it nicely in range of the Kraken ambling forward and having everything in its 4-inch reach. I'm not sure if it's just really cute and not very good, but in a list where you can, or in a scenario where you can focus that much energy in the center, that feels really strong. Because those Wraith engines can get out of the Kraken's way nice and easily. They're incorporeal. They can fly quickly over models. They can not worry about terrain. They can boss large areas of the board, allowing that Kraken to be the devastating gun platform that it is with Morden. It is a massively dangerous piece when firing its guns at things like Storm Lances, Heavies. You know, it gets work done against important pieces, so I think the double Wraith engine plan might not actually be completely mad, even though it feels like a bit of a gimmick.
Yeah, maybe so. The thing is,
maybe 1 Wraith engine's enough, because your Kraken is armor 21, and it is flanked by Derelis and Morden Ever, who both have repair, so shooting is not going to get the job against that Kraken. Mostly you need to protect it in melee, and the Wraith engine can do that against most of the major threats to it, just by physically taking up the space, while also casually throwing out the Dark Shroud where you need it.
Yeah, so the thing is then, what are you going to put in the rest of the army? I mean, if you, for example, play like a Mechanitrol boat, for example.
Yeah.
Sounds silly, but you could. You could actually swap the Kraken for a Sepulcher. And if you're playing going down a Mechanitrol route.
Could.
And actually, you could play gunslingers to create clouds out of, I don't know what, doesn't matter. And that way, shield Morden Ever.
Well, at that point, Morden Ever is quite well shielded by all those huge bases, not?
But if you play 2, yeah, but they don't block line of sight.
True.
The Wraith engines. So, if you have somebody with, I don't know, Shadowfire, it used to be a thing in the beginning of Mark II, in Signar, the Gunmage Captain Adams, yeah. So they don't need to, or they just shoot the Kraken because they can see it, because the Wraith engines don't count as an intervening model. And then all of a sudden they can see Morden Ever and just get shot to death.
True. Whereas the Mechanithral boat would bring Brute Thralls to shield guard off Shadowfire Shell.
Yeah. And possibly also the targets for gunslingers, for example. And actually, you can fit all that into an army. So 2, I think you can fit one Kraken two wraith engines and a full mechanical boat into one list, then actually you have some points left.
The double wraith engine list that I've got, it's Ghostleaf, because why not at this point? It's Mortenebra, Derelis, a Kraken, a pair of Stalkers, a Reaper, who we should talk about a bit in a second, a pair of Wraith engines, and a single Revenant cannon crew, because you need, you know, you want to have that Sack Lamb target, and sure, why not? You've got the 4 points. Though you could also take 2 Machine Wraiths in that slot, and, you know, one of them can be Sack Lamb at some point, and the other one can go do Machine Wraithy things. And being able to protect wide-out flags with Machine Wraiths is probably something that this list wants to be able to do. But I could also see bringing a lot of troops, because actually, what I forgot to mention earlier was Mortenebra's feat, which, despite the fact that most of her kit is focused towards battle group, her feat just gives rerolls on attack and damage rolls to everything. So her feat is quite beneficial to any infantry you might bring with her. What do you think of that list there? Like, do you think the double Wraith engine's a gimmick, or do you think it's a legitimate strategy?
Yes.
Yes to both questions.
It's a little too deep in the giant tank for my taste, but I do wonder if there is something there, because you want to bring Dark Shroud anyway. Fragman is always very good, but Mortenebra lists don't generally bring the living guys that he wants as that pawn target to keep him alive, so a huge base to block landing zones as well as double up as your armor debuff is possibly a good shout too, is just a race engine too far for my taste.
That is certainly a possibility.
What I would like in this Ghost Fleet setup is that you get some Black Banes in there, because then you can actually go the route of the Incorporeal queue a bit more. I don't know how you get it in there. Maybe just, I mean, I know this is heresy, drop the Stalker, but I would like to see this unit in there.
Well, I have actually been running. I haven't done the Wraith Engine build, Ghost Fleet and Mortenebra. What I've been doing is running basically a battle group list, but with Black Banes, a cannon, and a free Rengrave. With the Black Banes doing the job that I wanted the Wraith Engine to do of taking up space. And that's been pretty good. I mean, they benefit quite a lot from the feat, and, you know, they do the thing, they take up space. Rengrave in the middle of them is great if you want to prevent the landing zone being near your Kraken. And the incorporeal spam is pretty good. And also, when you take Mortenebra in Ghost Fleet, Mortenebra loves going first. Really important facet of her gameplay, because of the threat that the Stalkers bring with Overrun, and also because of the threat the Reaper brings with Overrun, that it just, the Reaper sits there casually threatening 20 inches at unusual angles because of drag, and that is enough to make the opponent start to worry and have to think a lot about it. They have to respect the fact that you could just overrun the Reaper or just overrun the Stalkers. I really want to keep the Reaper in there. I think probably the best thing to drop to get Black Banes in that list that I mentioned, is a Wraith Engine. I do one Wraith Engine and a unit of Black Banes, because that combination means that you don't just need magic weapons. You need high quality magic weapons to shoot down the Wraith Engine, and you need mass magic weapons to shoot down the Black Banes. So that's probably the best of both worlds there, because you're requiring 2 solutions of your opponent. And it all happens to still work inside a Ghost Fleet. Get your +1 to go first, which lets you get your Stalkers up into crazy positions. Also, cool thing with Mortenebra, if you can fit an Arc Node in there. Like, if you drop one Wraith Engine, and you could drop the Cannon as well, because you wanted the Cannon in there for Sack Lamb targets, more or less. So you could drop the Wraith Engine and the Cannon Crew, and get max Black Banes and a Machine Wraith, and then maybe you've got the best of both worlds there with that list.
Maybe so.
Because then your list would have the double Stalkers, which let you put that pressure on your opponent's caster. That is just seems to be an indispensable part of Crick's list. You've got your Reaper for that janky 20-inch drag threat. And worth mentioning as well that tuning up is an incredible thing. When you first read the Reaper, you think, oh yeah, I'm going to drag in a guy, and I'm going to hit my sustained attack, and then I'm going to buy lots of attacks. But realistically, you boost a hit, boost damage on the drag, you hit once, and then you buy one more attack. It's not that impressive.
Yep.
If that drag shot is already boosted hit and damage from tuning up, then you get to buy 3 more attacks. And then all of a sudden that Reaper is wrecking shit. So the list would end up being Mortenebra, Derelis, Kraken, Double Stalker, Reaper, a Wraith Engine, Max Blackbanes, and a Machine Wraith.
Sounds good.
I like that.
Maybe Dara.
Well, yeah, Dara. I go back and forth on Dara.
Yeah, do you want to be tanky with Morten Eberron? I think the answer is no, anyway.
I think you're right. Like, I don't think he's worth the 9 points in this context, but armor 21 on a Colossal is just enough to survive being hit hard by things that are likely to hit you. And I do feel like Dara could, like, in the games I've played, the Kraken has survived the turn where it shouldn't have and gone down the second turn. And I wonder if Dara could push that over the edge.
But it's only in specific matchups, right? It's only when you play against boards that it's really a difference. And then you could ask yourself the question.
Infantry models.
Yeah, but how many infantry models are there that can realistically, well, reach a Kraken through your Wraith engine? And I think then you're talking, what's it called, Knights Errant? They have magical weapons, right? No, not Errant.
I think that incorporeal boat is doing the same work that Dara would do in a different way.
Yeah.
So I like that better because incorporeal is a whole different set of challenges. But there's one other angle with Morten Eberron I want to talk
about. Okay,
and
go
that's
ahead.
Trying to take the most possible advantage of Saklam. So this is just my jank tank presentation. What Jack in Crix gets the absolute most out of two focus? And I think a really strong contender for that is the Scavenger.
Mm-hmm.
Because they get to charge for one, boost the hit, they'll hit and then sprint away. It's a pretty good two focus.
Yeah, I think so.
So, I decided to see just how far you could take that particular piece of silliness. And what I got out of that was Morten Eberron, Derelis, 12 Scavengers, a Reaper, and a pot of Scrap Thralls as your Saklam targets. So what do you think of that?
I think it needs one Inflictor, but apart from that, you're good.
Well, you could drop the Reaper for an Inflictor.
No. Could drop two Scavengers for an Inflictor.
Then there's only 10.
Actually, then you have... No. Drop one more Scavenger for a Stalker.
Yeah, that's probably... So, 9 Scavengers, Stalker, Reaper, Inflictor?
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Nate?
With the Inflictor, you've got a decent Spectral Steel target as well. You don't have a great interface target, ever. But that'll allow you just to play more than ever, not... jammed up against things, which can be a problem. Yeah, so what do you think about the big scavenger spam approach?
And it paints another, an even bigger bullseye on our face.
That's very true, actually. There's not really anything protecting her.
Yeah.
Because, frankly, a Crix Heavy is not a great barrier to have to punch through to make line of sight.
Yeah, or just knock down.
True. True.
And there's a lot of knockdown on a shtick these days.
Very, very true. I've been iterating towards that Ghost Fleet list that I described there over the few games that I've played. And I'm hopefully going to have some more games to report back.
That's very good. You guys, my girlfriend nudged and winked to me. So,
well, you
I'm going to wish you a very good night.
I'm very charming, but I don't think I can compete with that.
Yeah, exactly. Have a good night. Bye.
So, Ryan, do you have any closing thoughts then on Morten Eberron?
Morten Eberron just all seems to be a tough squeeze, trying to get the stuff she needs in her list, trying to get the bare minimum in there in terms of a damage buff, some other way to protect the Kraken. So we've already discussed our rare. I've been looking at Midwinter instead, because I think probably debuffs are the kind of half of the problem that's going to get your Kraken killed in one turn, with the other half just being kind of damage stacking through friendly buffs. So if you can deny the debuffs like Curse of Shadows, Stranglehold, all that kind of stuff, you might be able to get maybe 5 points of value out of Midwinter in those matchups. Squeezing a unit maybe just to give you that little bit more coverage on scenario, which is easier said than done, especially with what we've seen of Steamroller 2017 kind of showing quite wide scenario. So I think maybe one unit or two might be quite relevant if you want to play Morten Eberron going forward.
I mean, we can only like wildly speculate about 2017, but what we do know is that contesting works the same. So a couple of like machine rates or something cheap like that could just do the trick for holding off a scenario.
Yeah.
Especially if they're very wide. Like if you send those machine rates all the way out wide, a lot of lists can only deal with a machine right through a caster.
Yeah. I do wonder if you just maybe take more Stalkers instead, because if you're playing a scenario that, I know the one they showed at SmokeCon was effectively 312 inch zones wide, so it's a 36 inch wide scenario. But if you've got a Stalker on your corner of each of those two wide zones, they're probably both actually still in Morty's control area. So you can proc overrun with like the Kraken in the middle, and actually they might be sat almost on the very edges of the board scenario wise, but actually they still threat almost like to the middle of the board.
Yeah, that's true actually.
Yeah.
They threaten 7-7. They threaten like 20 inches. So they threaten beyond the center from the far side of the outside zone.
Yeah.
With overrun. So yeah, they're still relevant at all times. So maybe just Stalkers and Machine Wraiths are all, like, a pair of Stalkers, a pair of Machine Wraiths, and Mortal Embers fine on scenario. Because you can be fairly confident of the Kraken holding onto a zone.
Yeah, you're almost buying time with the other elements if you list.
Yeah, I think that's what you want to be doing. Like, you want to be stretching the game with Mortal Ember, which is weird, because she can also randomly end the game very quickly with, like, oh, you've given me an overrun with my Jax, and I kill you. But when you're anchoring on the Kraken, I feel like you want 3 turns of that Kraken doing work, and that 3 turns will be the vast majority of your opponent's army. So you kind of just want to funnel things into the Kraken and feed it.
I do wonder if you're leveraging the Kraken, whether you build the list to just build the list with things that are very good at killing heavies and also kind of okay at dealing with small amounts of infantry. So then you spend turn 2, turn 3, basically just murdering anything that can trivially kill the Kraken, and then the Kraken just runs the table and deals with whatever's left.
Yeah, so then, taking that angle, what do you think, more Reapers maybe? Because they're very good at pulling heavies out.
I would say more Reapers, because you want to be able to drag in the heavies, interface the Kraken with Dark Shroud from Ragman rerolls, and the Kraken, if you can get the Kraken a corpse or two early, then with Interface, the Kraken will just tear two heavies up, like, without a problem with Dark Shroud.
So maybe, yeah, maybe you need to take a different angle and try and control and or kill the things that handily kill a Kraken. But I suppose there's lots of things that fit that description is the problem. It kind of is like, oh, unit of Weapon Masters, that can get most of that work done.
Yeah.
A couple of units of Cav can do it, heavies can do it, so it's... You do need the rest of the list to be just contributing. So maybe the Stalkers are... Oh, this is painful to say, because they're so good with her. Maybe the Stalkers need to turn into something that does better Kraken
protection. Other Jacks, or...
Yeah, like, turn those Stalkers into another Reaper or a unit.
I was just thinking of the second Reaper.
Second Reaper seems good. Maybe I'm leaning too hard on what Mordor ever used to be.
Yeah, because Stalkers were kind of a... They're kind of a bread and butter and... Mark 2, but Grievous Wounds and Terminal Velocity was, well, Mark 2 Grievous Wounds just killed Warlocks outright, so that combined with Terminal Velocity was why they were as dangerous as they were. Like, Stalkers are still very good in Mark 3, but they're not the Warlock killers kind of auto-win that they were in Mark 2, so I do wonder if maybe...
Yeah, maybe that's the bullet point. So, I will, bring this podcast to a close and say thank you for listening to the episode of Chasing the Dragon Ball.